welcome to Fun Dip and Cherry Coke, the podcast to feed your pop culture nostalgia. I'm your host, Kira Gowan, and as you are listening to this, I am probably extremely jet lagged. I'm recording this early because I am about to go to China, and this episode comes out the day after I get back. Yeah, this is the second part of the Phantom of the Opera series that I recorded with Sydney because we had a lot to say about it. Without further ado, please enjoy the episode.
Said that's not what I said. I'm like, that is exactly what you said, because that's what I heard.
Exactly. And what I said. I absolutely said sugar wisp. I meant to say chivalrous, but it's been a fucking long day. Yep. Are you ready to
Welcome
jump
to
in
30. Let's jump
part
in
two of Phantom of the Opera.
Dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun.
And I won't continue because
we got approximately like what 10 minutes into this movie last time. Like pretty
we're
much.
Really good. We are very well versed in Phantom of the Opera, let me just say.
I'm gonna test your memory. Okay. What scene did we leave off at?
I have no fucking clue.
Really? Because I have it written down.
Well, because I watched the movie like 3 times since we've recorded this podcast.
Awesome. Good. Because I have not yet watched it since the last time we recorded, which was what, like a week?
About a week and a half ago.
Okay.
We'll cool. call it.
These are being released we're recording way in advance because I'm definitely not going to have time to record in the near future at all. So
fantastic. Wait, yeah. Hold on. I thought it was going to be released on October something or other.
That's literally next week.
I know. I know. Well aware.
I know. We're going to, okay. So the London premiere was October, it was either 6th? The 3rd or the 6th.
It was the 6th.
It was something like that. And my plan was originally to release this in that time.
31 years ago.
In that week. 31. Was it 31 or 30? 31.
31, yeah. Because it came out the year before we were born.
Yeah, 1986.
That's it.
But, you know, life happens.
Life.
So I am not going to be releasing this that week. It'll come out when the show is over 31 years old.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Makes me feel a little old, but you know, what
it's older than
these
you.
Days?
It's older than you.
I know, but I was, you know, yet. I was a twinkle, I think, at that point. We're not going to think about that too much.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that too, but I mean, if you were, then I almost certainly was. I don't want to think about it. Yuck.
Ew!
No, I think you're right.
We were twinkles.
The math adds up. Yep.
Ugh. Ew.
Well, let me tell you, the scene that we left off at was the... Poor fool, he makes me laugh.
La la.
Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah.
We don't want to go that far. Yeah, that's too high. I thought they did a good job with it in the movie.
I thought they did too. The problem is, I really don't. I mean, we've talked about this before. I really like the magic.
Yeah.
And the thing the movie did, and I can't remember if we've talked about this before or not, but the movie did was really explain away mm-hmm. all of the mystery,
mm-hmm.
which some people like.
I love it.
Yep. I love magic, and I like it to remain magical, so it was a little bit disappointing for me for them to kind of go through, and he puts the coughs or some sort yeah. of weird serum in her little throat spray, and it doesn't feel... It's like, oh, and that happened.
Although it's still pretty
that's
magic
how he
that
did
that.
Would
do that.
He didn't just look at her and she didn't just start croaking like a frog.
Yeah, but have you ever heard of a serum that actually makes people croak like a frog?
No, but I can imagine that it is a thing.
Actually,
I'm
you
not
know what?
A chemist. So.
Now that I think about it, the one time that I tried to drink Everclear straight.
Ew, bad idea.
No, what happened, I was making limoncello with my roommates, and the recipe called for, it was like half Everclear, half vodka, and then like a shit ton of simple syrup, and the Everclear was like to strengthen it after you have diluted it with a simple syrup, so it made sense. So I went to the store and bought a bottle of Everclear, my roommates, who were all boys at the time, were like, let's do shots, and I had them pour me like a half of a shot, and I did the shot, and then immediately my throat like seized up. I couldn't breathe, and then I vomited like immediately.
Yeah,
my body
I mean,
was like, this is poison, like more so than most alcohol. Like, you are drinking poison.
It is.
So
right up there with moonshine.
Yeah,
moonshine. I've actually had some moonshine. It's not too bad.
I've had,
but
absinthe
and will Everclear knock you on your ass.
The only weird alcohol that I've ever had
makes you blind. I don't know.
Moonshine.
I think
if
so.
If you do it wrong.
It's a thing.
Like eating, like eating prepared puffer fish.
Yeah.
If you do it wrong, you die.
You die.
Yeah.
Same with small price to pay for getting loaded. No biggie. Or eating sushi.
Live on the edge. Walk on the wild side.
Yeah. I'd rather just, you know, stick with a glass of wine. Sure. Does that make me old? That makes me old.
No, that's always, yeah. That's always what I've been interested in is just a glass of wine. But yeah, that scene was, I don't have any like strong nostalgic feelings about that.
Yeah, I mean, I like how they also cut out, that's where the chandelier is supposed to fall, mm-hmm. at the end of that scene. Or that, yeah, I guess whole, yeah, I guess
that
would be a
that,
scene.
Well, that whole, so that scene, then what follows that, they decide to substitute Christine in, and then while they're, like,
putting while they're in the costume, transition,
they do the ballet from Act 5?
No, Act 3 of tonight's opera.
Yeah, and during that ballet is when the Phantom and Monsieur Bouquet have their, like...
little altercation.
In which Monsieur Bouquet does not keep his hands at the level of his eyes. And he is
royally
directly on stage.
Right. And then everybody screamed. I will say, I really enjoyed how they did that, though. The complete chaos of trying to get the ballet on the stage. Nobody knows what they're doing. And there are sheep. I don't miss because I never really experienced it in this lifetime anyway, but sheep on a stage, come on.
I don't think
why can't we do that anymore?
I've seen productions of Pippin that use a real duck, but I think that's...
But a duck is so easy.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Boulder High's production of Pippin used a real duck. The one that that I worked on crew for, which was amazing.
Where'd you find a duck?
Somebody lived on a farm.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
What scene was next? Do you remember?
Okay, so after that is Christine and Raoul on the roof. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
love me, that's all I ask of
for me you. This bit pisses me off a little bit, mainly because, you know, I get it, Christine's a little scared and a little bit, you know, freaked out, and you know, she's a little too timid, and so she's running to the safety of Raoul, her childhood friend. I get that.
Her childhood friend and sweetheart.
Well, were they actually? Because I think that's up for debate.
I think that's probably true. I thought there was a specific line, but now I can't think of it.
Maybe there was, but I feel like they were just friends, and...
I think she always maybe had a crush on him.
Well, probably. He was a fucking Viscount.
Sure.
I mean,
Sure.
But so they're up there on the roof, and she's pretty much saying, take me away, take me away. And they're both professing their love for each other. And I've always had an issue of dependence with dependence. And I feel like all they're asking is for each other to be their everything. And it just rankles me a little bit.
I think that you're the one who said that in love stories, that's good.
In love stories, it is good, but... I'd prefer a fierce passion for each other than all I want is for you to be my everything.
It's not yet earned.
Exactly.
Or if it was earned, it's all in backstory that we, the audience, have no...
Well, we don't know.
...experienced, so it feels...
It feels fast. It feels rushed, especially the way the movie sets it up. It's based in fear. It's not based in genuine love.
I don't know. I think it's based in, nostalgia and looking for that thing.
All I want is freedom, a world with no more fears.
No more night.
No more, all I ask is freedom.
A world with no more night. And you always beside me to, it's
hold
a little,
to guide me.
It's a little yucky.
It just, you know, and I like that cheesy sappiness, but I like there to be a fire behind it, and it just seems a little bit juvenile, almost like protect me.
it is awfully fun to sing terribly at karaoke.
That I can imagine. I feel like the whole scene was played out well. You know, it's on this rooftop. I'm pretty sure it's all CGI. Mm-hmm. But they sung it nicely.
No, wait, wasn't it not CGI? Wasn't there, some trivia thing where, they were smooching and... Oh, that... Never mind.
That's just because they were smooching for so long that she had to keep reapplying chapstick. I don't know why it wasn't exactly...
It didn't look like it.
But she does have really large lips.
Yeah, maybe they're just really delicate and gentle. And he was a little too rough.
Maybe he's just a little too aggressive for her, which is a little bit interesting. See, he's the safe bet.
I have more of a problem with the Phantoms part in that song when he comes in and says, like, I was entitled to you because I trained you.
Right. And I think that that's, that possessiveness is where I'm a little bit more okay with because of the story than I would be in real life.
Right.
Because in real life, oh, no, you didn't.
She is her own person.
She is her own person and capable, although she is a little bit of weak of a weakling.
Yeah.
But in the story, I feel like that's the passion. That's the insanity that he brings to it. That is his character, is this, I gave you everything.
I gave you my music.
So he gave her all of this, which in his world is all he has, all he is. He gave it to her. Regardless of whether or not she asked for it, she accepted it. Mm-hmm. And in accepting that, he feels ownership.
Interesting.
It's very Greek.
Yeah, it's, ugh. I don't like it.
No, and in real life, in modern day, in non-fantasy, it's bad.
Yeah.
Terrible. It does not work. In this kind of story, it's all part of the madness, and I love it.
Okay. That's fair. I don't know. It makes me a little
It's the magic.
I mean, because, like, you know, I'm a sucker for love triangles, but,
But he is so possessive.
Yeah.
And, you know,
entitled to.
Oh, of course. But he's thinking he's a genius, which compared to all the other Nimrods around him, he is.
Yeah.
So when no one's around to kind of slap you back down into your place, you automatically, and this is just human nature, you start to have an overinflated sense of self.
Yeah.
So that's that. And that's where the, you know, at the end, Christine, that's all I asked of you, is that's when the chandelier is supposed to come crashing down.
Right. So this but is they like don't. In the play, this is intermission.
Yeah, which works really well for the play. Mm-hmm. I understand why they did it for the plot line. It still bothers me just because it's not like what I remember.
It's like such a, it's such a good song to be the finale of an act, though. Like,
oh,
it's exact. Well,
well, it's such a good crashing down of the chandelier to be the end of the act.
And Masquerade is such a good song to start Act Two with, which let's get into it.
Let's move on to Masquerade.
Which we already touched on the changes that they made from the musical, which was like the changing the color palette from colorful to black and white.
To colors.
But I want to go just from memory. What was your favorite from the, specifically from the book, but also from the stage performance? What's your favorite outfit in Masquerade?
Wait, from the book.
From the book.
My much, much loved book.
The book. I was packing my room and I couldn't find it.
Oh, that's so sad. I think it's probably at your parents' house.
Or, I mean, I'm virtually
positive it's at your parents' house.
Yeah, I can't imagine getting rid of it.
I hope not.
But it's not my house.
Lose something of ourselves.
Oh, shit. I have stuff to bring you. I'll bring it to you tomorrow.
So,
The book. What's your favorite outfit?
So I think I like the monkey costume a lot. Mm-hmm. The papier-mâché musical box monkey.
In the shape of a costume.
In the shape of a barrel organ attached to the figure of a monkey. Well, the figure of a monkey becomes a costume in Masquerade. I love that one.
Yeah.
I still think my favorite, and I'm going to go back on this, I believe is Meg's book or Meg's costume, in that she's in this little kind of tights with a little suit jacket.
Interesting.
And it's, the colors are pink and green.
I don't remember this one at all.
And I just remember thinking, ooh, oh no, it's pink and black and gold. Let me pass that over.
Yeah, I'll describe it.
I just, with a little top hat.
This one is, that's Meg?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. I don't recall this one even at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like this little fluffy thing with like little upside down crowns on it. I'll take a picture and post it. That's interesting. That's so funny. I don't remember that one at all.
And again, I think it's more memory from the book. I don't necessarily remember it from the stage.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I remember my favorite one I specifically remember from the stage.
Is the man and woman.
It's the man and woman.
Predictable.
Yeah. And also now that I'm looking at it, there's also somebody with a bird mask that I'm remembering. But there's the one that's the most memorable to me is this one. And it's a person and half of their outfit is this beautiful dress. And they have like a little veil. And the other half is like a tuxedo or something.
Mm-hmm.
A suit tuxedo with a like half of a top hat, and their shoes are off too, so that would be very difficult to dance in.
Very.
But that's like the most vivid one for me, and I think it was my mom's favorite too. I think that's probably why I like it so much.
Why you came to
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all awesome, and then I'm trying to remember, I thought Christine's outfit when I'm remembering it was different than it is. And
yeah, it was so, like that white kind of...
It's
like,
the white pink dress. I think I really liked it in the... I don't like her outfit at all in the movie because it's just so bland and dumb.
I mean, I think that's most of Christine's outfits are pretty...
Well, I don't know. She gets a little campy there in The Phantom of the Opera.
It's all
when he pulls
like,
her through the mirror.
You know, like nightgowns with ruffly sleeves and stuff.
And
like,
corsets. And corsets.
And corsets. Yeah.
And campy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay.
Also in Past the Point of No Return.
I don't remember her play outfit in that. Like what she wears in the stage version. I don't remember that.
I think it's fairly similar.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Oh my God. We cannot even get to that scene.
Okay. So we're not there yet. We're not there yet. But just so you know, it's coming.
What other memories do you have, like, of Masquerade specifically?
Masquerade, just the song. The song in general is Hide Your Face So the World Will Never See You. I'm trying to remember it now. I'm having a very bad memory day. It's all about hide yourself and be whoever you want to be, mm-hmm. which for me, masks have always been a really just interesting part of my life. Mm-hmm. I have a huge collection along with hats and masks. I'm a weird person. I'm acknowledging that at this point in life. But, you know, it's all about this. You can be anyone you want to be behind a mask. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, Oscar Wilde has many, many famous quotes on masks. But one of them
is...
Give
him a mask and he'll show you.
Yeah.
Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask and he'll tell you the truth.
That's one of them. There's also only... Normal people never wear masks or something. It's only the very pretty or the very plain who will ever wear a mask.
Oh, interesting.
And which I kind of disagree with. But yeah, they just allow you to be whoever. You can be someone else until you take it off or put on another one, a little Game of Thronesy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah. it's such a great song. It's got a lot of parts.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got their own lines and just all of these interchanging, all of these interchanging lines that, you know, are plays back and forth. Everybody's got their own story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
and
what I remember from the play.
That's just so cool.
Just being so overwhelmed by like the amount of things to look at. And I love those like big ensemble numbers because like every time you watch it, you can see something different and you need to like pick out what you want to like look for, and it's so different every time, and that's like my favorite thing in like any musical.
It is, and yeah, I mean exactly as you said, it's a bunch of different people. Mm-hmm. Each one has their own storyline, and you can focus in on a different one. You need to see it and need to hear it multiple times in order to pick up on everything. And once you know them all and you know which ones you like, you can tune in and mm-hmm. out. That for me is a really fun experience.
Yeah.
Just kind of embracing it all. I mean, if you remember, so Kira and I, we had a wonderful joint...
We went to it.
Graduation.
Oh, our graduation party.
Our graduation party. And it was kind of Phantom of the Opera themed. It was just kind of a family luncheon, which was interesting because our graduation
I don't remember it being a luncheon or a family
we all thing. Made masks, and this...
God, I remember this party so differently than you.
Oh, really?
Was it the one at the place, at the space?
Yeah, at the studio.
Oh, God, I remember it so differently than you.
How do you remember it?
It's just like a kind of like a, you know, like a play around in a dance studio and like run around and do cartwheels and stuff. Like, I remember it very like physically.
Yeah, I remember. But I mean, that was it wasn't your typical let's get wasted graduation party.
No.
So that's kind of saying family.
Okay.
It's graduation from high school, but you know.
I mean,
still high school.
To be honest, no, I don't really know because I was very good in high school.
I enjoyed it.
It was a lot.
It was a lot really of fun. It took place at a dance studio. We all decorated masks and I remember this.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I remember these things. And our, at least the ones I made, the graduation cards that I sent out, all mm-hmm. had the song from Masquerade in them.
I have
like the
so many cards from you, and I think they all have a little drawing of a mask on them.
Probably.
Like, of anybody, like, of everybody that I know, you're the most fascinated with the idea. Like, you've always wanted to have, like, a full-on Masquerade.
Oh,
like,
always.
As long as I can remember.
It just seems so perfect.
I know.
And seems, and the fact that other people don't want to just makes me a little bit suspect.
Yeah.
Like, you must be boring if you don't have a side you can
reveal. A lot of work.
Oh, yeah, but that's not too bad. I mean, you're talking to the girl who had a goddamn ice gala, for crying out loud. We trekked a whole... Oh, yeah. Do you want to be in our ice gala next year when you come back for Christmas or something?
Yeah.
So we hike up to one of the lakes up in Rocky Mountain National Park. I think it's... I can't remember which lake it is. We hike in, and we hike in all sorts of ice gala stuff, and we go ice skating on the lake with... And we have all these, like, appetizers and hors d'oeuvres and, like, we make cider and everything.
I'm going to be a California girl this time next year. I'm not going to be able to handle cold.
Oh, no. It takes more than a year.
Okay.
Trust me. It took more than a year before I was fully Nancy-fied.
And you bounce back, right?
No. I've got the heat on and it's only, like, 60 degrees outside.
No. It was, like, mid-50s today.
Yeah.
I think. It's getting cold. I don't like it.
You know, I'm okay with it. I've come to terms with it. I don't like the rain because you can't do anything in it. Other than sit and read a book, which is great.
Which is really nice.
For about 2 days, and then I'm very much over it. Oh, yeah. Hydrating like champ.
Yeah. Good for you. I'm drinking beer. Okay. That was like, what, 20 minutes on masquerade? No, that's not true, but...
Hey, I think that one warrants 20 minutes.
That's true.
If any one of them does.
But, okay, how do you feel about Raoul and Christine not wearing masks to the masquerade?
That really bothered me.
Me too.
Really bothered me, but...
You have to play along to the gimmick of the party that you go to. It's like going to a Halloween party not in costume. Just fuck straight off if you do that. Don't do that.
I agree. Together. However, they're both so boring and I don't like them that it made sense.
But everybody's like totally okay with it. Nobody's like, hey, you guys, where's your costume?
Where's your costume? Well, they were, if you look at it kind of from a pure costume party, maybe they were just playing princess and...
It wasn't just a costume party. It was a masquerade ball.
It was a masquerade ball. But there were a lot of other people not in masks, too.
That's true. More than in the play.
More than in the play, but not even. I guess that's true. Masquerade is, yes, technically mask, you should wear a mask. But I think anybody in, like, true costume horns count, I feel like. Anything that changes your person.
My favorite masquerade scene in any movie is the one in Much Ado About Nothing.
Which one?
The one with Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson.
That's the only one
that I like, to be honest.
Oh, you don't like the Joss Whedon one?
I don't.
Oh, I love it.
The other one is way better.
Well, it's got Denzel Washington, Kenneth Branagh, and Emma Thompson in it. I'm sorry, don't actually compete.
Don't forget Keanu Reeves.
All right. And then there's Keanu.
I shall eat when I have stomach and wait for no man's leisure. That's my Keanu Reeves impression. I hope you enjoy it.
I feel like it was fairly accurate. I mean, maybe a little too much personality, but I guess, you know.
He's fine in that movie. He does everything he needs to do. But in that movie, what I like about it is that it is purely based on the deception.
Well, it has to be.
Exactly.
That whole scene only works because...
It's about Emma Thompson not knowing who Kenneth Branagh is when he's like...
Right.
When he's doing that.
Talking her up. And and also them not knowing who
Keanu Reeves is.
No, because Keanu Reeves goes up to, not Benedict, Claudio.
Oh, Claudio.
Goes up to Claudio and says, oh, are you not Benedict?
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yep.
So that really only works if everybody's in costume, if everybody...
And is it that night that they do the whole Hero Margaret in the window sex thing?
No.
No, different night.
It's a different night because that fails that night because then they get... Oh, you do.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Because it fails right then.
Oh, interesting.
And then, so because he goes back and then, you know, Beatrice grabs him and they're like, hey, you guys are engaged now. We totally got the okay. And he's like... Oh, I thought you guys were messing with me. But then the next night, Keanu goes, I didn't fuck everything up, so I'm going to try it again. And so his little friend goes and like, oh, well, I can actually nail this one. So he does.
Honestly, do you know what the best part of that movie is?
Which part?
Michael Keaton as Dogberry.
Oh, that's
so good.
I mean, I really like Nathan Fillion as Dogberry, too. I felt like that was pretty damn appropriate.
That's the best part of that movie, for sure.
Well, Dogberry's the best part of that play in a lot of ways.
Dogberry is really funny.
I mean,
malapropism.
I should show you something. I know it's...
Okay.
Hold on.
We can pause. All right. We just paused so that Sydney could show me a really beautiful rock that she made for her boyfriend for Valentine's Day.
Very romantic.
It's so cute. It's Much Ado About Nothing themed, and it's really sweet.
Yep.
Make me one. Choose a different line.
Obviously. I'm pretty sure you and I... Well, okay. I'll think about it.
I love you with so much of my heart that there is none left to protest or whatever. Do that one.
That's part of that one.
Oh, is it?
I didn't read the whole thing. I think that's part of that one. No, that's not part of that one.
Nope, that's not part of that one.
No, I remember. Yeah.
Because I think that's at the very end. This is in their courtship, but I think that part is at the end.
No, that's in their... That's when they're arguing at the very end because they realize they're being called out.
Yeah. Because Claudius and Leontes are saying, come cousin, I'm sure you love the gentleman, and I'll be sworn upon it that he loves her.
Which perfectly describes Sasha and I's relationship, actually.
That makes sense.
We're both very competitive.
That totally tracks for you guys, yeah. I mean, I've always kind of thought that, like, I don't know, I guess I don't think that as much anymore, but I've always kind of thought that that would be, like, a perfect relationship. I think it's a little, like,
It's confrontational and hard.
But it's also a little, like, neurotic, and it takes, like,
It takes two very similar people to do that. You have to like fighting.
Right, and I do. Like, that part is, I'm totally on board with, but it's the part where, like, you won't back down until the other person kind of does, which is that I think I'm,
yeah.
I just don't think I'd ever
We come get past to that. Impasses. And okay. that's, we have to be, you have to be okay with an impasse, because you have to be okay with not necessarily... You have to be okay with getting your point across, knowing that they got it, but them not acknowledging it.
Okay.
So a lot of times I will be perfectly clear.
For sure.
And Sasha will, I can see it click in his head and he'll get it. It'll be like, click, oh, I can't, but I can't back down now. And so you have to be able to perceive that.
And
you also have to be able to argue to the point where you're laughing.
Yeah.
Because that's the best part.
But, no, it's just the, like, it's like the fear of vulnerability, I think. Like, not necessarily, not with you and Sasha, but like with Beatrice and Benedict, that just, like, I cannot, because I'm like way too afraid of being vulnerable, that I, if like both of us are as afraid of being vulnerable as I am, like, we're never gonna get anywhere. Like, it's just not gonna work.
You see, I feel like neither of them are, they're both a little bit vulnerable, but they're both of the same, like, feistiness.
Right.
And so they are vulnerable, but it's not a terrible vulnerability. It's not like heart-wrenching. It's kind of like, I don't want to seem weak.
Right, exactly. And that's me.
I'm actually hurting.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I don't know, like, because Claudius and Hero are, like, the exact opposite.
Oh, yeah, they're just
They're both so... just like, hi, I love you too, great, we're perfect, I love it, oh my god, it's so,
but,
like,
oh, smooth. You're gonna, which, you know, I envy that.
Yeah.
I envy that. I know a few couples who are like that, and I look at their relationships, and I'm like, you guys are just so in love, and so, and I'm sure they have problems, but I look at that, and I go, oh my god, and they are still nice and kind and fun with each other, but for the most part, they are so loving.
Ugh.
And for me, I look at that and I go, and they spend all of their time together and I go,
oh boy,
that would, I mean, I can't spend that much time with anybody, no matter how much I love them.
Yeah.
I will kill someone.
Yeah. I don't think I know anybody like that. It's, like, very strange to me.
Yeah. I feel like,
can you
know,
think
because
of anybody that I know who's like that I'm just not thinking of?
No, most of, well, in all honesty, your parents are a lot like
that. Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah, I guess that's true.
Your parents are like that. We hang out with a lot of couples, so I feel like I see a lot more couples than you do probably in the, just because that's what, we're at that stage where all of our friends are married and having kids now. I know. Don't worry. I am the awesome auntie that I have embraced this role with a vengeance, and I love it.
Your friends do have really cute kids.
They do have
especially
cute kids.
That one. That one little one was
Hi.
Oh my god, oh my god. It's like so wide-eyed and dreamy. Oh my god, I love that kid.
Shout out, this is for Miles. You're adorable.
I don't love children, but Miles, I love you. You're the best.
Perfect. Adam Cassio, this is for you.
And then, okay, so at the end of Masquerade, there's like a, that's when our like weird,
that's when our phantom pops out of nowhere.
No, I was going to say that's where our weird like entangling of like cut and paste, cut and copy paste of the script starts.
Oh, yes. So at that point, they do a lot of cutting. I think they realize that the script is really too long.
And they start inserting some of that stuff later.
They insert things. They play them. They cut out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they also move things around to make that work.
That whole other note scene.
And they cut out a whole scene of notes.
Mm-mm.
So let's finish with Masquerade. Phantom comes up. And why so silent, good messieurs? Did you think that you had left me for...
Did you think that I had left you for good?
There we go.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da.
So he comes up.
Which is supposed... Well, that's not supposed to be part of notes.
That's not part of the notes, but it's the intro to the notes.
Yeah.
So his whole scene is the intro, or his whole dialogue is the intro to the notes. And it's him pretty much handing the script
to John, triumphant.
And then he kind of talks about how they're supposed to do all of this. And then it leads into the notes, the second set of notes, which they completely cut out.
What is the line that they changed? Because the chandelier hasn't fallen yet. The one that's, I advise you to comply. My instructions should be clear. Remember there are worse things than a shattered chandelier. What is it in the movie?
There are worse things.
Because we both remembered it immediately when we were watching it.
Yeah, and it was awful. It felt disgusting.
It did feel kind yucky of like in my mouth. I don't remember what they changed it to, but we both did at the time that we were watching it. Remember what the movie had changed it to?
Remember, there are worse things.
Hold on, we'll take another pause and look it up because it's going to bother me too much.
I don't think he says, "I advise you to comply my instructions."
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Okay, so I think I was wrong. So I think it was what I was thinking of was when at the beginning when they say to a prosperous year to a new chandelier. Instead of that, they say to a prosperous year to our friends who are here.
Right,
and we were both just like, bleh.
Because there should have been a shattered chandelier right. at this point. However, they didn't shatter the chandelier, so that line would be a little amiss.
It would be very confusing.
Kind of funny, though.
So, yeah, I guess they don't say the remember.
No, I think it goes straight from, "Why so silent, good messieurs?
Did you think that I have left you for good? Good?
Have you missed me, good messieurs?
I have written you an opera."
And then... here I bring the finished score, Don Juan triumphant. And then I think he goes directly, instead of saying, "I advise you to comply, my instructions should be clear."
Yes.
He goes to, "Your chains are still mine, you will sing for me."
Which doesn't make sense. I don't know.
He rips the engagement ring from around her neck.
No. Then he stops because he says,
he sings it in the play, but he speaks it.
Then he starts reading the fondest greetings to you all, and it's really bizarre because he's reading
reading the letter.
Yeah, he says, "Fondest greetings to you all. A few instructions before rehearsal starts," and then he reads that, and then he says, "Your chains are still mine, you'll sing for me."
Right. Yeah. So instead of being, "I advise you to comply," he starts reading the first letter or the instructions letter.
Yeah.
From the second letter scene, which is the rehearsal.
This is so in the weeds. I hope that people who listen to this love this movie and play as much as we do, because otherwise this is not going to make a ton of sense. That's okay.
Yeah, we can put maybe a skip button. Or skip if you don't like this bit.
Skip if you don't like this podcast. That's fine. Whatever.
Or just this part, because the rest of it, I think, is
I've already kind of come to terms with the fact that, like, if you don't know what we're talking about, my podcast might not be the podcast for you, because we don't go into too, like, it's more thoughts about it than like description of it. So I don't know.
Yeah,
whatever.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, I feel like there are a lot more closet Phantom of the Opera lovers than we think.
God, I hope so. I hope they're all fans of this podcast.
We'll get them all. You're every last one. Hey, like Phantom of the Opera? Hey, like this?
I love you. Yeah, so that was weird. I didn't like that. So then the next scene is kind of the, like, Phantom's backstory that Madame Giry tells to Raoul.
So that's an inserted kind of new
scene that's not in the play at all.
Not even a little bit.
From the book, though. So it's like from the originalist source material, right.
Yeah. So I guess the part that I don't really like is that at the end of Masquerade, the Phantom's supposed to disappear. He doesn't. He runs off, which is awkward and bizarre, and it just doesn't look good. It doesn't last. It lacks that kind of pizzazz.
It is weird. He should fall through a hole in the floor.
He should fall through
the
hole. I mean, he just should.
Yeah.
But instead, Raoul goes dashing after him, and then he ends up in the Room of Mirrors, which is part of the book. It's not the book. It's part of Gaston Leroux's book.
Yeah, not our book.
Not our book. Very special.
Or the Bible, which is what most people think of when they think of the book.
Yeah, not part of the Bible either. I don't think the Bible would approve of Phantom of the Opera.
Probably not.
I feel like it's too sinful.
Yes. We haven't even gotten to pass the point of no return yet.
Oh, Jesus. No, we haven't. Letter.
But yeah, that whole backstory scene, like, I guess it's cool because it kind of explains like what his deal is, which is neat, but also like I don't find it necessary, but maybe for a movie it is.
Well, then that's what I think that happened with this movie is part of it was they were broadening the audience. So, yeah. Which is why they do a lot more speaking in, you know, the play. It's almost a complete operetta. There is very little spoken word. Mm-hmm. It's all sung. In the movie, they speak a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah. it's awkward. And for me, I don't know if this is just because I am such a fan of the play that it feels awkward or if it really is awkward.
Well, when they, like, a lot of times they'll speak things that should be sung, that they, like, speak, but in the tempo that they would be sung. And that is always, like, awkward for me. I can't think of any specific ones, but I feel like Patrick Wilson has a lot of them.
Yeah, I feel like Phantom has some, too. Mm-hmm. Again, can't remember
specifics. Oh, the whole Little Lottie scene.
Little Lottie. Oh, yeah. Barf. Oh. Ugh. We hate you, bro.
That's the worst I hate. Well, Christine does it, too. Right. They're both the worst in that.
So, yeah, there are parts that are spoken, and I think it's awkward and clunky. And
yeah, it is.
For the most part, I feel like that's what this backstory is it's for people who don't get it, for people who aren't willing to just embrace the story as it is, who aren't willing to, who want a movie. They don't want an operetta.
Yeah.
Which, fair. Hey, I get it. You yeah, know, me too. There's time. Okay. There are never times when I don't want an operetta. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But I've come to terms with it and it's fine. My big problem with his backstory is the ages. Oh. I'm trying to quantify, I guess, the ages between Madame Giry and the Phantom.
Let's say she's 16 and he's 9.
Right. I feel like that's
as generous as we can possibly be.
Yeah, because they're the same size.
Right.
When they're running away from the cage, his cage, where he's just killed.
But she's also a ballerina, so who the fuck knows?
Right. Ballerinas can be small, but although ballerinas aren't really supposed to be small, they're just supposed to be petite. Or they're not. No, that's backwards. They're supposed to be small, or they're supposed to be light, lean, not necessarily small.
True. So who knows?
But it is, you know, back in the day. But then again, everybody was small back in the day. So I'm really just confused. Yeah.
Generously, he's 9 and she's 16. She has Meg when she's, let's say, 20.
Yeah. That gives her 4 years. Yeah. Okay. So, and at that point, that makes him add 4 years to 9, 13.
Uh-huh.
So let's say that Meg and Christine are about the same age, right?
Let's say Christine is 3 years older than Meg.
Christine is 3 years older than
Meg. I've always thought that Christine is older than Meg.
Yeah.
So therefore, Christine is 3, he's 13, she's 10 years younger. So then that works.
That works. However, it doesn't work because it's very clear that there's more than, I think it's 9 and 16, more than 7 years difference between the Phantom and Madame Giry. You see, all of this, it works each different way, but it doesn't all work together. So this that kind of
we had a hard time with that.
Let's not think about this as they knew each other when they were kids. Yeah. Let's just not insert that because it's weird.
Let's move on to your favorite scene.
My favorite scene.
The graveyard scene.
I do like the scene.
The scene makes me fall asleep.
It is one of the more boring scenes of the show.
Oh, it's so boring. I'll give it to you. So boring.
But it is, for me, that's the backstory.
Yes. Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again.
Wishing You Were Somehow Here.
Which is the song that Christine is singing to her father.
To her father.
Slash
depending on who you're analyzing it, sometimes it could be sung to the Phantom. But
I think more broadly sung to the Angel of Music.
Right.
However you choose to interpret that in Christine's life.
And I've always chose to interpret it as she thought they were essentially the same.
Yes,
but when you think about Christine in the dressing room, you know, explaining to Raoul how the music of Angel has come to you, she's like, Father always said that he'd send me an angel of music. Mm-hmm. And so it could be this gift from her father who's supposed to be kind of a ward almost.
Right.
a guardian.
Yes.
Ward's the other one.
Yes. I thought you said award. Like, award.
Oh, it's not an award.
Yeah, no.
Like, I accept this award.
I was, like, trying to process that.
No.
Her dad guardian sent her an angel guardian after he died.
Yeah, to kind of watch after her.
Right.
That's who, you know, in her weird kind of, you know, psychologically messed up mind, youth, I mean, she was young and she was traumatized. I mean, her dad died. She was an orphan. So, you know, you could, I guess, perceive that then this random person who somehow falls into her, into line with her. So the whole thing is up to chance. And this gets a little convoluted. I'm like, okay, did he stalk her and figure out she had all of these weird neuroses, or did she, or was it luck?
I think it was luck.
I'm going to go with it's luck, and that it just, they both made it into what they wanted.
Right.
And then he, at some point, heard her talking about the angel of music and then started calling himself the angel of music.
He was like, oh, I think she means me or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So that's what I'm going to go with. Because I it's the least creepy.
I mean, I think also, like,
it's less, it's the least malicious.
Whether or not it's, like, explicitly for the Phantom or her dad, it doesn't really matter. Because it's actually something bigger than both of them.
Right.
Like, which is this, like, concept that she's constructed of this angel of music.
Right.
But that doesn't mean the song is any less newsworthy. And I hate it.
So let's talk about something else.
Oh, do you want to talk about the fight?
Let's talk about the fight scene.
I hate it.
So at the end, Raoul comes and interrupts her trance where the Phantom is trying to woo her back, essentially. In the guise of the angel of music.
He's so good at whipping her into a trance.
So just
yet again.
So good at that. I really, I want an angel of music right now.
She is entranced very easily.
She's very easily entranced, but hey, it's Victorian era. That's happens.
She just had bad circulation.
Yeah, like, that's it.
Blame it on her circulation.
And probably wasn't very well nourished.
True.
And those corsets, they really block off oxygen to your brain.
Exactly.
Anyway, so Raoul comes and interrupts this trance. This is very different from the play.
Yeah.
So in the play, let's go with the original, they go in and the Phantom starts shooting fireballs.
Yeah, I was thinking,
I missed the fireball.
He had a, like, yeah.
That shoots fireballs, which is totally awesome.
Yeah.
And the Phantom has the upper hand the whole time. And pretty much it's Christine begging Raoul not to go in because he's going to get hurt.
Uh-huh.
Now, in the movie, the script flips, and Raoul has the upper hand and is about to kill the Phantom, and Christine stops him. And then they just kind of walk away as if anybody would just let that happen.
Yeah.
You don't. The only reason Raoul was pulled away in the play was because Christine was begging him to leave, and the Phantom was still ready for the attack. She's still begging Raoul to leave in the movie, but
she just leaves with him.
But the Phantom's just sitting there, just kind of laying in the snow. I think not. Yeah. I'm sorry. The Phantom would have kicked some fucking ass.
I mean, probably.
I mean, I feel like, yes, he was defeated, but I feel like he would have gone to the death.
He has magic, also.
Well, I mean,
not in the movie, he doesn't.
Not in the movie. He's a very bad sword fighter. We have to wonder where he got a sword and where he learned how to fight. I mean, apparently he didn't learn how to fight very well. It's a little, I don't like it. It's weird. It's clunky and it makes no sense.
I think it's boring.
And that's according to some people, they think it's boring.
I tune out of fight scenes whenever they start. I'm just like, I'm gone. I'm done. This is not for me.
I like pretty fight scenes. I like fight scenes that look like dance. So martial arts to a certain extent. As long as it's not too long.
I like any fight scene that's too long-ish. Like, if there's too much happening, I just close my eyes.
I like it when it's well shot and very well choreographed. This, I felt, was messy.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But, you know, it's not a fighting movie. That's not where they focus themselves.
But, fortunately,
this leads us to...
That let us take a little tiny nap and wake up just in time.
For the point of no return.
Yes. Yes. And I'm doing this with notes. You're doing this without notes. You know exactly what scene happens when.
Yep. I know exactly what scene happens when. I'm embracing the fact that I am a full nerd.
You've seen this movie twice in the past, like, week and a half?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I do a lot of things to where... You I don't need my
movie on
hands.
In the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, or I don't need my mind, really, but I need my hands. So
that's, I listen to podcasts for that. But.
I have to focus too much in podcasts. I need something that I can walk in and out of.
Oh, I have a much easier time doing that with podcasts than movies, even if I've seen them already.
No, not when I've seen this many times.
Yeah, that's true. But I feel like I get more from a podcast because it's just audio rather than, like, I'm missing half of it because I'm not, like, looking at it.
So I can Driving is where I need a podcast or an audiobook.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's because my eyes really do have to be focusing, and mm-hmm. I have to be engaged, but I also need to be awake, and driving is boring for me. So it's I really do fun. Need something that I can really engage in, but I really cannot look at. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, a lot of the stuff that I'm doing that's either on the computer or with my artwork and that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
I really don't need my eyes a lot. Like a lot of it's by feel. So mm-hmm. I can be watching the movie, flipping in and out, you know.
Okay.
That's why bad TV shows and rewatching is like my jam.
Interesting.
For when I'm doing art in the middle of art projects.
Yeah, I definitely just like put a podcast on and like can do dishes or like art projects for like ever. But
yeah, no, dishes is good. Dishes is good for podcasts. Yeah,
for sure. I like love doing dishes because I get to.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they each have their place.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I also don't really have a convenient way to watch movies, so I just don't.
I'm a full tablet girl right now.
How do you watch Phantom on your tablet?
Phantom I don't watch on my tablet. Okay. Phantom I watch actually on my laptop.
Yeah.
And that's usually, laptop is for when I am stationary, so when mm-hmm. I am in the middle at my workbench and mm-hmm. doing something, that's Phantom. But other stuff where I am moving around from room to room, that's full tablet.
Yeah, I've definitely like watched Great British Baking Show while like cleaning and stuff.
Yeah, it's nice to do.
Yeah, that's a good show. Oh my god, so good.
So good.
I'm so far behind. And I'm
not like, really.
Well, yeah, I'm almost very slow at it. Like, I've been watching, I mean, I'm very far behind because everybody else has, like, already watched all of it, like, a year ago.
Oh, no, I just finished season one today.
Yeah, and I've been watching for probably 2 or so months, and
I'm okay, not even there yet.
Yeah.
I'll buy it yourself.
Yeah.
Gonna go with it.
But let's talk about Don Juan.
Oh, Don Juan triumphant.
This is the past the point of no return scene.
So, for those of you who don't know,
hottest scene this in is anything
the
ever.
Hottest scene in a musical hands down ever.
Yes.
I mean, can we think of one that's hotter? Like more pure passion and hotness?
No. More the only heat. Other musical that I know anymore is Hamilton, and I was thinking like Say No to This, but no, not even close.
Yeah. I feel like
Say No to This is very, very good though.
I've heard it. Yeah. No, I've heard it, but it's nowhere close.
It's like steamy, but not this steamy.
No, this is pure. This is like 1895's version of porn.
It's basically porn. Yeah.
It's basically porn. If you think about it that way. But
it's erotic.
It really is. We can just
call it erotic because it's not really, it's not pornographic, but it is like extremely erotic.
There we go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What's your favorite line?
Oh, man. Okay.
Or what's the hottest, like, what's the most, like, steamy line? Like, the most, like, erotically charged line? Not, like, for you personally, but, like, that you can think of.
That I can think of? Put it on pause. I need to pause.
Okay, we're gonna pause. Well, do you want me to tell you mine while
yes,
you're looking?
Yes, tell me yours.
When will the blood begin to race? The sleeping bud burst into bloom. When will the flames at last consume?
And she does this weird thing. Consume.
Yeah, she really does, like, eat it.
She goes
consume.
For that one.
Yeah.
I like how it's split up into her lines and his lines, and pretty much his being like, I'm a scoundrel. I've what brought is, you that our passions may fuse and merge.
And our passions may fuse and merge.
Yeah. Past the point of no
already imagine. Is that's her line, I think.
Past the thought of if or when, no use resist.
Hold on.
Past the point of no return, no backward glances, the games we played till now are at an end. And then this part, past all thought
past
of if
all
or when.
Thought of if or when.
No use resisting.
No use resisting.
Abandon thought and let the dream descend.
Is my favorite line right after that? When will the blood begin to race? The sleeping bud burst into bloom.
No, that's
later.
Quite a bit past. That's
oh
kind
my
of
God.
Towards the end. Our passion play at has last. This is just one song that is steamy.
And we were definitely talking about how, like, both of our dreams is to make out to somebody while listening to this song at some point in our lives. And,
at some
like,
point in my life, this is going to happen. I don't think I'll ever you know, and I'm long-term relationship with a theater major. You'd think you that this would have happened
oh
already.
God.
Turns out he was in theater for different reasons, but he likes being the center of attention.
Yeah, he does. This all tracks.
Yeah. No, it makes sense, which is, I've dated a few theater major and actors, and it's never happened.
And
I've been friends with others.
I was always behind the scenes.
Kira, one day we'll make out to the song, and it'll be glorious.
I mean, probably.
If no one else will. 75, yes. If it hasn't happened yet, you and me.
Absolutely, you're on.
And it will be hot.
It will be so hot. Yeah, definitely. You got it. So now it's immortalized in audio.
It's immortalized in audio.
Yep.
Fantastic. Deal. On the internet, and nothing ever goes anywhere from the internet.
We watched him flip his cape over his shoulder in this scene. Twice? Thrice?
Three times.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So there's another thing that's the hottest thing on the planet, and it's when somebody flips their cape. I mean,
I'm trying to act it out. I cannot.
You can't. It's because we don't have a cape, and I think I may have just thrown out my shoulder.
We're just going into the camera.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that.
Whoosh. It's a whoosh. It's a whoosh.
Watch the scene and you'll know. It's probably on YouTube.
And yeah, it's I have to fan myself.
I know, me
right
too.
Now. That might be because the heat is up to 80.
I love it.
Bed.
Nice. The temperature is at 69.
And we're hitting on the heated floor. But
it does, yeah, I was like, it feels warmer than that, but also we're
sitting
talking
on
about
the floor.
That.
Whoosh. And whoosh. So, yeah, that.
Yeah.
I need more tea. Do you want a cup of tea?
I would love a cup of tea. We'll pop. Sydney just made me a cup of tea and the mug that she gave it to me and has the Phantom of the Opera on it.
That was from the London production. I bought that after, I think, somebody, I believe it was probably my brother, even though I love him more than any other human being on the planet, tends to break a lot of my shit.
That doesn't surprise me, knowing your brother.
No, he's such a klutz and just, overall fairly destructive.
He's a little goober.
He is a little goober. But I think he broke my original one that I bought from either the first or the second time I went to see Phantom in Denver. But then, and it has a Phantom of the Opera mask that, turns white when you put hot water in
this
it.
This is the pretty... wrong... This is not actually a Phantom of the Opera mask, though.
It's not, but it's the logo.
Yeah. But it's not actually, which is
weird. That's not, well, they did that, so because I've watched the special edition, whatchamacallits, whole interviews with all the cast and crew and all of that stuff.
Natch.
Of course, why wouldn't I do that as a self-professed obsessive? They talk about how they tried to do it the way they had it in the design.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't get enough emotion out of... Pretty much it was too hard to emote.
I see. Yeah, because it only has one eye.
Well, the one that they have in there is half the face.
Yeah.
So you can still tell a lot of emotion with half the face, with sideways.
Oh, I thought you meant Okay, I thought you meant that they tried to make the logo the one that they have in the play.
No.
But they tried to make
they
this one.
They tried to make the...
So, to...
pretty
to,
much top half of the head as opposed to one side.
One half. One... Split. Bisected laterally.
Vertically? Vertical?
Yeah. So, this picture is of basically the eyes would be covered and the nose would be mostly covered. So the mouth would be
really
the only
hard
thing that's
to express proper emotion just with your mouth.
That makes I see what you're saying. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, not very eloquently, but hey.
No, but I understand now. So that's
it's Thursday night. What do you expect?
In the production, not on this mug.
Exactly.
Got it.
So that's why the logo is different from any of the masks.
Also, this mug is designed for right-handed people, because, well, I guess it could be either.
It's a mug. It actually can go either way.
But, so mugs are designed, as a lefty, I know this all the time, but, which side the cool thing is on will be on the inside if you're right-handed for most people. On most mugs, the inside...
Is the thing that you want to look at.
Right. So if you drink it with your left hand, the thing that's cool is facing out. So that's just a thing that I've noticed.
If you drink it, and do people who are left-handed drink with their left hand, or do they drink with their right hand?
Primarily.
See, that... Or do people who are right-handed drink with their right hand? See, that makes no sense. You would think that it'd be on the outside displaying you'd want to display to the world. Hey,
well, yeah,
this is... Because you can't tell because you're drinking. It's at your mouth.
That makes sense, I guess. But...
I feel like not a lot of thought has actually been put into which
side
it's on.
I feel like more thought than you would imagine.
I mean, I know a lot of designers and I know a lot of product designers, and they are thinking about a lot of things. But I also feel like there are a lot of people who are not product designers who are making mugs.
That's probably true, but I definitely know that the standard mug. Like, if you're not thinking about it, if you just, like, go to a place, like, they're going to put it on the side so that if you're right-handed, the thing that's cool is facing in.
That makes no sense, though.
Send me pictures of you drinking out of your favorite mugs with your left hand so that I can see the pictures on them.
My mugs on have Twitter, cats fun and they're pod. Sleeping and they're all the way around.
Oh my god, why did you not give me the cat one?
Because I had the cat one.
That's fine. That's
sorry, fine. I would have, but I was drinking out of it.
Because if there's anything I'm obsessed with as much as you're obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera, it's cats.
No, really? I had no idea.
It's true. Did you know that I really like cats?
You know, I'm trying to convince Sasha to let me get a cat, and it's not working very
I would
well.
Say you can borrow my cats, but...
You're taking them with you.
Eventually, but they're going to be here for a little bit.
Oh, are they staying with your cousin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's bold.
I mean, if you want
all
them,
of them?
You can borrow
all three?
Yeah, all three.
Oh, man. No, I...
Two of them come
I
together.
I want my own
one
because I
separate.
Want to train it to be a mouser.
Starling, I'm sure, would be a mouser. Starling,
I don't know.
Is
your cats are kind of evil and by nature hate me. It's weird.
Have you ever met the kitten?
No, I haven't met the kitten.
Oh my god,
I've met your
she's
other two
amazing.
Though, and they're fucking crazy.
No. Starling is very, very different. Pico hates her, if that helps.
It does help a little bit.
I don't know why you hate my cat so much, except for that she stole some bread once.
She stole my bread. That bread is expensive, okay?
She stole my bread, too.
And she made me, like, get really mad at you guys for a very long time.
I mean, it was bewildering to everybody. Nobody knew what was happening.
I thought you guys were eating my gluten-free bread, which I was thinking, God, if you're going to steal someone's bread, you really want to steal the gluten-free bread?
Pico didn't even eat the bread. She just took it and hit it.
Like, she picked at it. I know.
She, like, bit into it, but she didn't eat it.
I take it as a personal affront.
She's never done that.
That was an act of war.
I think that bread must have been, like, really delicious or something, because she's literally never stolen bread since, like, those two loaves.
Yeah, I believe there were three. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, maybe two, three of yours. Oh, she stole one of mine, too. So, okay, four.
There we go.
That was so weird. I don't know why she did that. And she hit them in the weirdest spot. So we had a roommate with a fish tank that was on cinder blocks, and it had a sheet over it, and she got, like, she got the bread, like, under the cinder blocks and, like, tucked it in to one of the
into
holes
the,
in
cinder
the cinder blocks.
It was weird.
It was so weird. She never does that. It's the only time she's ever done that. Maybe it was Josh doing it.
It could have been Josh. He was weird.
He was a little weird.
I mean, he was actually probably the most normal out of all of us, but I think normal people are
that's
weird,
true.
So...
That's probably true.
I mean, he smoked a lot of pot. He was in college. I mean, what...
Yeah, he was, like, super chill and...
He was
like
super
really
chill. He had...
And honey.
Yeah.
He had good food.
He had a really dumb, super hot girlfriend. That's all I remembered. She was so dumb.
I didn't
dumb.
Think she was that hot. I do remember she was...
Well, she was superficially hot.
Oh, interesting.
She was very, like... generic.
There were a lot of I was
he was kind
a lot
of generic
dude too.
He was really short
girlfriends
though.
Like that. He was a little short. He was a cool guy. Zach was nice. Shout out to
what's
Zach.
His name?
Josh. Why am I calling him Zach?
I don't know. Bra. He was too
it's
much
like
of a dude bra
name.
For
I'm
me to
Josh.
Be even remotely interested in. Dude bra. God, I took one look at him and I was like, you're fine.
Yeah. But anyway, so it was right after that scene that the chandelier drops.
Okay, so yes, where were we? Scene, chandelier drops.
The chandelier just fell because we already drove
because
over.
Past the point of no return. In the play, oh, and that's my favorite part is he confesses. That's not my favorite part, but it's one of them. He confesses his love, and that's how it alerts all of them. Oh shit! It's the Phantom. It's not
well,
Pyongyi.
Does he start singing Raoul's little song?
Yeah, he starts singing "All I Ask of You."
Share with me.
Yeah, it's like, and then he instead of saying whatever the character's name is supposed to be, he says Christine.
Yeah,
and then it's like, oh shit. There he is. Yeah. And, but whereas in the movie, I've been going back and forth of whether I like it or whether I don't. In the movie, they all kind of realize what's going on.
Yeah.
Slowly, like, oh, that's not Pyongyi.
And that was something we were debating is like, how quickly does Christine realize that it's not?
Right. I feel like this is another one of her trances and she's just
true.
Kind of in the moment.
Yeah.
Not really realizing what's going on because she's the music.
Yeah.
Has seduced her again.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that might be true.
I'll go with it.
Cool.
But yeah, and so then the way he gets away from that is he cuts down the chandelier.
Right. Which makes perfect sense.
It does make perfect sense, and it's fine. It's just, you know, it's
different.
Not how it's supposed to be.
It's different.
So, based on the play. But listening to all the interviews with Andrew Lloyd Webber, he said that that's how he wanted it to be in the when he originally thought of the play. And it does make sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense. It does make sense to have that go at the in where it is in the movie.
Well, also because that's kind of the indication that the Phantom has sort of he's not gonna. He's like pulling out all the stops.
Right. He's done. He's lost it.
He's past the point of no return.
Like, of no return. Yeah.
He's gonna. Because he's not like destructive or anything before that too. Or like, well, I guess he kills some people. He
kills a few people. Yeah, no, no biggie.
But it's just, he doesn't threaten like Raoul or Christine. And I guess he doesn't actually.
Well, in the fight scene in the graveyard.
Oh, you're right. Damn it.
You know.
Well, oh well.
He does, but he's not, you know, screw it all. He's not destroying the world, which is essentially what he's doing in this, is he's burning down the opera house.
Yeah.
I understand where in the play you can't really do that. It's too much chaos to then bring it back when they go underneath
and
do the set change.
I mean, because otherwise that'd be like a really, really long act one and a really short act two if you put intermission there.
You'd be a really long act one, and it'd be a lot of mess to clean up. And I mean, obviously not real mess,
right?
But it would be, wait, what's going on? There's too much chaos going on upstairs. Why are you bringing it down here? Whereas in the movie, it's everybody's clearing out, and I feel like they can show that really well.
Yeah,
of everybody clearing the theater.
If the opera house is burning down, that the basement where all the water is would be like
the only real safe place, and that would be his refuge.
Yeah, and then he would drag her down there, which he does.
Yes, and he drags her down, and
it's wet down there. It's super wet.
It is, and you know there are mixed reviews. And when I took the tour of the Paris Opera House, they said that there's not a lake. But then in the interviews, they said that there is a lake. So now I'm just really confused.
Maybe at one point there was a lake, it just doesn't exist anymore?
Maybe. Possibly.
I mean, I think, like,
I feel like there should be a lake.
I don't know, there's water in sewers. It's just whether or not it's, like, a lake.
A lake, lake.
Probably not one that you could, like, gondola down. Well,
sewers.
Yeah, exactly. Gross.
Yeah.
Did you go to any, like, catacombs or anything?
I didn't go to the catacombs. I haven't gone any of the times I've been to Paris.
I never have been to a catacombs. I've been to different ossuaries in, like, Rome and
stuff.
You
used to, like, be in the catacombs a lot, though, in Boulder.
Oh, in the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a cool bar.
I like License 21 better.
Ew, no.
I do. I like swing dancing.
I've never seen swing dancing there. Can I tell you a really monstrous thing that I did at License Number One once?
What did you do? Oh, Jesus.
Like, we were, like, pretty drunk. It was, like, after karaoke one night at, like, Zanmai, and a bunch of us went to License Number One, and it was, like, I don't know, it was late for them, which means it was, like, 11:30 or something. Mm-hmm. There was basically, like, everybody was clearing out, and there were so many people who hadn't finished their drinks and just, like, left, and we were, like, watching them do this, and I definitely just, like, didn't want to spend $13 or whatever for a fancy cocktail, and somebody like left it, and I was like, when I was like pretty sure they were not coming back, I just went and I like took their drink and I drank it.
Hey,
I did that with like two or three drinks. I think there was like a wedding party that night or something, so there were like
a lot of fancy people. All the times I've been in there, I mean, I don't party like that anymore. Yeah. So I don't stay out past, if I'm gonna stay out that late, I'm in a real city. And I'm not in Boulder.
I think it's fun to do in Boulder because then you, like, I don't know, I just feel, like, safe and, like, I always know, like, how I'm going to get home.
Well, I only ever do it with people who I know will watch my back. So, yeah.
I feel like I don't need to do that as much in Boulder. I feel like, I don't know, I trust Boulder enough.
See, I don't. I get really iffy. I don't trust Boulder.
Oh, it's weird.
I feel very, like, you kind of need to watch your back here. Huh. I feel like it's the college town vibe, and there are a lot of people looking to take advantage in a college town.
Yeah, I've never felt that way.
I feel safe if I'm in a group of people that I feel safe with. Yeah. And that's really the only, no matter where I am. I actually felt safer in London by myself than I did in Boulder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wandering. I'm older by myself a lot. Not a lot.
I feel like here a lot of people might turn their backs.
Okay.
I could feel like, and there are a lot of people who do, a lot of neighborhoods that are really quiet that you could get caught in.
Yeah.
Like while wandering home or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas in London for me, everybody was always out. No one was going to mess with you
because
you couldn't, if you screamed, people would be there.
Right.
Whereas I feel like there are a lot of places in Boulder you could scream.
Yeah.
And people are so in their houses and wrapped up.
I guess that makes sense.
And that's, and there are enough places around, like, downtown or around the areas where I would go hang out and party.
Yeah, I guess I might, like, the Hill I would feel, like, sketchy on, but, like, downtown.
Really? Yeah. I feel like any way for me to get home from downtown, I go through several neighborhoods that are quiet. Quiet neighborhoods freak me out.
Oh, interesting. I mean, okay, yeah.
Because you can scream, like, and unless you can prolong that screaming, you're done.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't matter. Ugh,
this is horrible.
Sorry, okay. Oh, God. Stop.
So anyways, Christine's being dragged by the Phantom, and she's not screaming.
And she's not, because I understand the opera house is burning down around them.
Yeah, so she's going to a safe place where there's water.
But they are having a very kind of interesting dialogue of kind of going back and forth of, you know, oh my God, Christine's just realizing for the first time.
What did she say?
She says, let's find this, shall we? Put the exact wording down.
Because I'm thinking of, why, you ask, was I bound and chained in this cold and dismal place?
Not for any mortal sin,
but the wickedness of my abhorrent face.
And then she's saying,
what tears I might have shed for your dark fate,
grow cold and turn to tears of hate.
Yeah. Is that later, though? It's like slightly. This all kind of...
It all blends.
Mushes together, because then Raoul and Madame Giry come down, and Raoul, like, almost drowns in an underwater, like,
which doesn't happen in the play.
Well, no, because you can't.
You can't almost
unless drown. You're Cirque du Soleil, you probably don't have, like, an underwater portion of your stage.
Cirque du Soleil should do this. I bet they could pull this off.
That would be so fun.
I feel like if anyone could do it.
Sort of like a circus-y, like, ballet type. Oh, God.
Pity comes too late, turn around and face your fate.
An eternity of this
before your eyes. This haunted face holds no horror
this haunted
for me.
Face. Yeah, so, it's in your soul that the true distortion lies. So then he tries to make her choose.
She's like, wait, I think, my dear, we have a guest.
When Raoul shows up.
Sir. This is indeed
an unparalleled delight.
Unparalleled delight.
Yeah, so Raoul comes, the Phantom, like, traps him.
Free her! Do what you like, only free her! Have you no pity?
Your lover makes a passionate plea.
A passionate plea. Please, Raoul, it's useless.
Love her. Yeah.
Does that mean nothing? I mean, I feel like that's really naive of him to even pretend to, like, go with. Really? You love her? Fuck you. This dude has nothing, and he loves her. Like, come on, Raoul.
And then so Christine has to choose between Raoul dying.
Yeah, he pretty much says, make your choice.
Or me, living with the Phantom forever.
Yeah, live with me forever, or I'm going to kill your lover and let you go.
Right, and so Christine chooses.
She says, but she's, Phantom. You know, she does choose the Phantom, but she says right beforehand, I'm like, not doing this for you.
I'm doing this for him.
I'm doing this for him. And I think
I think she does grow in this play. Like, I think she does display some growth.
Well, at the very end, because she woke up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the whole time she's in this, like, magical fairyland of, I'm not really in the real world, but I'm kind of scared. She's naive.
And, like, hoping that somebody else will take care of her. And then this is, like,
her realizing
times when she, like, shows her own agency, which is, like, a relief.
Yeah, she does. And it is. It's good. But she does that, and she truly embraces it. She embraces her decision. She goes up. Yeah. She, like, gives him the Phantom this giant, passionate kiss, which is really gross in the movie. It's a little too graphic.
Yeah, well.
And there's saliva.
Yeah.
And it's not a good kiss.
I don't like wet kisses that much. But if you're crying, like, it's going
to... Yeah, well, that's the thing, is they're both crying.
It's going to get wet.
There's mucus.
It's going to be... There's
stringiness.
There's going to be waterworks going on just everywhere. Just ugh.
Not pretty.
I mean, I've smooched people when I'm crying before, and it's definitely, like, yucky.
Yeah, I haven't, because when I cry, I get all, like, my blocked up, and I can't kiss somebody while I can't breathe.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work. I get really congested when I cry.
It's really not great.
I'm not going to plan on doing that.
But then what changes?
She kisses him, and the Phantom realizes he changes. He's like, oh, this is what love is. He says her doing, sacrificing herself for him is like, or for
him,
Raoul.
And Raoul, yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's what love is. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. And then he's like, well, I'm going to do that for you.
Yeah.
Is so kind of how I look at it. So he lets her go.
Raoul
and she
Christine
goes.
Walk away singing, I ask of you again. and Meg comes in and picks up his mask from the chair that he's disappeared from with her tiny hand.
With her tiny hand.
It explicitly says, with her tiny hand.
Yes. The Phantom walks slowly towards the throne. He takes his place on it, sitting on his cloak. The mob, including Meg, appears above, climbing down portcullis. As the mob enters the lair, the Phantom wraps his cloak around himself and disappears. Dun, dun, dun. Meg crosses to the throne and picks up his mask in her small hand.
Oh, in her small hand. I'm sorry, not her tiny hand.
Not her tiny hand. That's our president.
And curtain.
Curtain.
How do you think this movie helped shape, like, who you became? Or not, I'm sorry, not the movie, but the play. Like, shaped, like, who you became.
How do I think the play, or the movie shaped the play?
No, how do you think the play shaped, like, you?
Oh, me.
Like, your, like...
My life.
Expectations of stuff, and, like, your perceptions of stuff, and just, like, kind of who you are.
Well, I think it's made me more of a romantic, in my true sense of the word.
Yeah.
Romance is one of those few words that I think you can, well, I guess not few, but one of those words that you can really apply a very subjective meaning to, mm-hmm. depending on who you are. For me, this has kind of cemented my version of romance. Kind of that Victorian era ruffles and right. you know, corsets. You know, past the point of no return is the ultimate erotic moment. And then the ultimate love and passion in just the rest of everybody's feelings towards each other, mm-hmm. essentially. So I love that kind of self-sacrifice that everybody comes to at different points, or Christine and the Phantom each come to at different points for this play. And the losing yourself in a delusion.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of romance right there.
Yeah.
And for me, it just kind of gives me that twinkly, starry-eyed, like, oh, you know, it's a little disturbing, but hey, sure. isn't romance.
It's like a, kind of like a fairy tale.
It's a dark fairy tale.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody's... And it's tragic. It's mm-hmm. it's given me a profound love of tragedy. you know, any kind of operetta, any kind of opera, really. I have a hard time with the comedies.
Yeah.
I prefer a good tragedy. Well,
like, and even though the ending of this is supposed to be, like, quote-unquote happy, because, like, you know, Christine and Milo ride off together, like, it's still that sense of kind of, like...
Loss.
Yeah. Because you have this, like, deep empathy for this character that, like, doesn't...
Right. I mean, he's awful. He's truly awful.
Yeah.
He kills people. He tortures people. He, you know, manipulates.
Yeah.
But he was tortured and manipulated, and he didn't learn any, he didn't know any better. So I always have a lot of compassion for people who don't know any better.
Yeah. And, like the Lennies of the world.
Yeah. What?
From, Of Mice and Men.
I didn't read it.
It's not, I don't.
Yeah, I tried to a few times, and I was
it's not for me. But Lenny kills something or other because he doesn't realize. But that's different. It's different, but it's, you know.
Yeah, no, but it is. It's people who are in earnest but truly just don't know. Mm-hmm. And who, you know, he works full-heartedly and passionately about everything that he does. He puts all of himself in, even though he's kind of misguided. And,
right.
You know, he didn't have any more.
Right, well, he had to, like,
didn't have a better way
kind of thing to become, because that's really all he did have.
In order to survive, that's how he did it.
Right.
And
I wonder where he got his food and stuff.
I'm sure he stole it.
From the opera house, or, like...
Yeah. I mean, the whole opera house was, like, a miniature city.
That's true.
They had everything.
Yeah.
They had dorms. So I'm sure they had kitchens.
Just seems like a lot of work.
Well, yeah. But he also did a lot.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
In this make-believe world. But... Yeah, that's the Phantom of the Opera for me. I mean, I feel like it really did affect my life.
Yeah, no, I think it
More so than, you know, many other stories. Maybe the only other one that comes close is possibly Harry Potter in terms of how it's affected my life as a story. But Harry Potter, Shakespeare, Oscar Wilde, and The Phantom. They just came out with illustrated book 1 and 2s.
Oh, boy. Oh, actually, I feel like I saw somebody who... Maybe it was... It might have been Leishan who had that, and I was looking at... She had, like, a Harry Potter brunch party over the summer, and it was so fun. We had, like, nice. You know, colorful drinks and snacks and stuff.
Oh, nice.
She wrote, like, the Moaning Myrtle thing on her, or, like, Enemies of the Air Beware on her bathroom mirror and lipstick, and she had, like, a little Moaning Myrtle, like, taped to her toilet. It was amazing.
That's a good one. It was
such a great party, and she has, like, this really beautiful wand, and, like, all these decorations and stuff, and you, when you got in, you put in a little pin for what house you were. What house are you?
I've taken a few quizzes. Usually it ends up being Gryffindor.
Oh, interesting. I would pin you as a Slytherin, to be honest.
Fair.
That's a compliment, because I think you're like...
I am. I can be crafty, like, and devious, but I'm also... I have a, like, really driven, strong martyr strike.
But I feel like you're like, ambitious.
I am, but I will martyr myself for anyone. Okay. And I think that that's what ultimately it comes down to.
Because I'm a Gryffindor.
I can see it.
I'm for sure a Gryffindor.
I would have pegged you more as a Ravenclaw.
I'm a Gryffindor / Ravenclaw, but more a Gryffindor. I'm not clever enough to be a Ravenclaw.
I don't think it's necessarily pure cleverness is the drive to
but
be
I
clever.
But I think that's Slytherin, right? Like, the drive is all Slytherin. But
Slytherin is very cunning, myself above everybody.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of the defining feature of Slytherin, I think.
You say that like it's so negative. But
I don't. Okay. No, I don't. I don't say it as it's negative. Okay. I'm just saying it is very, like, I'm going to do what I need to get ahead, and, you know, I'm going to be ambitious, but nobody else really affects me.
So I see the four houses as being clever, ambitious, loyal, and kind as, like, the main definers.
Who's kind?
Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff. Okay. Clever.
Ravenclaw.
Ravenclaw. Ambitious.
Slytherin.
Slytherin.
Loyal.
Loyal is Gryffindor. Gryffindor.
Kind. Hufflepuff.
Yeah, but loyalty is also one of the Hufflepuff traits. It's one of the main Hufflepuff traits.
Okay.
So loyal and kind. Right. Gryffindor is loyal and just.
Brave. Okay. That's why I'm a Gryffindor then.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty big on on things being
just.
Just above all else.
Like, if you get more macaroni and cheese than me, and it's not fair, that's an injustice. Or if your bowl has more jelly beans.
Unless I think I've deserved more jelly beans.
That's why you're a Slytherin.
No, that's
why you're a Slytherin, and that's why I'm a Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Or, as my dad always said, life's not fair.
Right.
And that's Scar.
Yeah, life isn't always fair, but we can hope that it's always just.
Not
the same.
well,
but
I think on that, I think that's probably a good note to
end Harry Potter.
We ended the movie, and now we ended our Harry Potter conversation.
Perfect.
What were we gonna toast to for this half? Well, we can toast with tea, but that's not what we can toast to.
I'm really happy about this tea. I'd like to make a toast to my tea.
I think we should toast to the cape swish.
Oh, here's to capes. Can someone please bring them back again?
And flipping them over your shoulders.
Flipping them over our shoulders. But no, I really do think we should. I mean, I feel like that's part of why I wear scarves so much. It's my beginning stage of bringing back the cape.
I feel like I had like a square scarf that I wore in kind of like a shawl way, but not quite cape way.
I wear one. I have a square that I fold in half as a triangle, and I wear it over one shoulder.
Oh, interesting. Remember that time that we went bowling in capes that we decorated with our
your 21st birthday?
That was my 21st birthday. Didn't go out in rage.
No, we didn't, bowling. Because all of your friends were under 21.
All my friends are babies. Yeah, that was when I was especially friends with, like, especially young people.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, you're talking to the girl who went to London
really
on her 21st by herself in a country that she had already drank in for 3 years.
That's funny.
Legally.
Oh, that's cool, though.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, it sounds like exactly something you would do. No, for my actual birthday, Jenny and I went out to a bar, and it was like a Tuesday, and we just like had drinks at midnight, and it was like
very chill. Tried to take my brother out for his 21st.
Did he not want to?
Yeah, no, we were trying. In San Diego or in California, you can't go out on your birthday. It has to be...
Fuck that.
I know.
That's so dumb.
It's so dumb.
Oh my God.
They won't let you into the bar unless it's a day after.
Oh my God, even if it's midnight?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yep. They won't let you. I tried so hard.
That's so dumb. I wonder why.
Mm.
Californians, your law is stupid.
Very stupid. But we went out. I bought him a bottle of something or other.
And that's good. Could he get something at a liquor store?
Not really. I think I ended up buying it. And we ended up having a toast.
Have to celebrate your birthday, like, after.
Again, it was probably like a Tuesday.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
And, you know, all of his friends were either here or... I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, what God, I've been to the pub on people's 21st birthdays, like, so many times, where they're, like, kissing the buffalo. It's the pits.
Is that a thing?
Absolutely sucks. Yeah. There's like this big stuffed buffalo head at the pub, and people on their 21st birthday. The Pearl Street Pub.
Oh, okay.
The Pearl Street Pub and Cellar, that's next to where Old Chicago used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, it's sometimes you'll be like sitting at the bar.
Is that
like,
the one with
right
the rodeo
there.
Or with the
with, Froyo? With the bowl?
What? That's not the one with the bowl, is it?
It's the big. That's there's the big ride? Buffalo. No, you don't ride it. That place closed like a decade ago. I feel like.
It definitely wasn't a decade ago.
Yeah, no, it wasn't a decade ago because I couldn't drink a decade ago.
I definitely remember
the place that was like on the corner by where the
not
ice skating rink
memorable.
Used to be.
I don't remember where it was. All I know is that's where we always ended up trashed because that's what you do.
It was called God. What was it called? It was called like I forget.
By the time we were there, it didn't matter what it was called.
I went there like twice. It was bad.
I spent a Halloween there one night.
Oh, geez. That place was...
I was a spy. That was a great costume. I had a magnifying glass and a trench coat.
Oh, that was good.
And, oh, and those stockings with the line up the back.
Oh, sure. The secretary ones from the movies, like, other movies.
Yeah, and, oh, and I had some great, like, 40s pumps. Yeah, that was a great... And what did I do with my hair? I feel like there was some hats.
Finger waves?
Might have been.
Because you could do finger waves.
Yeah, that might have been it. No, that was the 20s party that I did that.
Oh, well.
Anyway.
It's not really that relevant.
No, but I'm really liking that costume. I might pull that one out again.
Yeah, that's good. I'm just going to be a dinosaur again because now I'm too stressed to plan anything else. It's probably after Halloween by the time we release this. Whatever. It's almost
anyway, early. She'll let you know what she was, I'm sure.
I'll be a dinosaur.
Meh.
Okay. To capes.
To capes.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you'd like to get in touch, you can find me on Twitter, FunDipPod, and Instagram, also FunDipPod. We're also on Facebook, yep, that's it. Please rate and review and subscribe in iTunes. It means the world to me, and have a great rest of your day. Bye.